Hey, this is Doc Mike with Real Liberty Media and the Redneck Dentist here. Nice to see you guys all again. That was a little fun intro, I think. At least I had fun doing it. Hey, it is, what, April 24th? And getting ready to do the show here. I got a few things I want to talk about, as always. I probably won't cover everything that I want to talk about, but we're going to start out with, of course, I was going to say NASCAR. That's pretty funny, but of course, NASCAR's in Talladega. I'm pretty redneck. I like NASCAR. And no, I'm not watching it on my big screen right beyond the studio right here. Yes, I am. So we'll see how that goes. But no, I won't be watching. I'll catch it later. It's on the DVR. I can always catch it later. I did want to start off with the redneck moment of the week here. This is kind of funny. Got to shut off all the music. You guys probably can't hear it, but I could. So we have 5-acre property we refer to as Ravenwood, Ravenwood Farm, Ravenwood Acres, or just Ravenwood. It's just our little slice of heaven here in Oregon. And we decided we were going to, well, actually years ago, we started, okay, let me go back just a little bit. My internet connection does not come from a cable or a satellite. It comes from a radio antenna about 8 miles away. And that's funny. Oh, in the chat room, funny. Anyway, my internet connection comes over terrestrial Wi-Fi. The signal is generated from an antenna about 8 miles away. So we have some trees up here. You know, we have trees in Oregon, lots of trees, lots of evergreen trees in Oregon, kind of one of the states that's just well known for growing big, giant evergreen trees, lots of them. You know, and a lot of industry comes from logging, of course, not, well, I should say, despite the greenies who don't want trees logged, although it's the most reliable renewable resource. You know, in the state, Oregon replants more trees than they harvest. You know, it takes, what, 30, 40 years to get a good tree, but I mean, we do a really good job of keeping that a renewable crop anyway. So I don't know if any of you have gone to my YouTube channel. I'm not going to pimp it because I think YouTube sucks. Hopefully I'll get something up on one of the alternatives here soon and get some videos going over there. But I have a drone video. And actually, from that drone video, you can see that, you know, my property is basically surrounded by evergreen trees. Now, this is kind of the funny redneck moment. You know, redneck moments don't always have to be like stupid moments. I think rednecks are pretty resourceful, actually. So we had decided years ago that we were going to need to take out some trees because, of course, the tower, I live on a hill and the tower is kind of in the valley. So I kind of have an antenna, a dish antenna aimed down at that tower so I can collect the greatest signal to get the best, you know, internet performance, of course. So there's about 6 evergreens on my neighbor's property that we have talked to them for years about taking out, and they have no problem with that at all because it actually gives them a little better view. And, you know, the trees are kind of older, and one of them is not, it's actually starting to die, and these evergreens die from the top down, which is kind of interesting, but we'd talked to him for years about taking these trees out. Well, we're finally getting around to it. So we had a guy come up that we used to work with, and he kind of looked at the trees and he goes, yep, no problem. We'll take those out. But do you want, you know, some of this underbrush cleared? And we were like, yeah, that'd be awesome because the neighbor actually wants a little more pasture land. And by clearing out some of this underbrush, you know, it provide them some pasture land. So here's the funny thing. So we own this property, and then the neighbor owns two 5-acre parcels. So they have a friend of theirs that rents one of the 5-acre parcels that has a house on it. And so all three of us, all three parties, plus the tree guy, were standing out here talking about taking out those 6 trees, maybe 7. Well, the person who's renting, I just happened to ask her because, you know, I'm kind of always interested in people's kind of feedback, you know, just to make sure if there's going to be any problems, we kind of talk about them ahead of time and you know, work them out. So this person, I asked her, I said, okay, now, do you have any concerns about, you know, us taking out those 6 or 7 trees? Because the trees are actually on the property she's renting that the other neighbor owns. So she says, well, she says, you know, I'm a tree hugger at heart, and it always concerns me when you talk about taking out trees. And I swear to God, I literally turned 270 degrees and looked at the millions of trees surrounding us, thinking to myself, what could you possibly be thinking about these 6 trees? It's not like these 6 trees are some kind of, you know, redwood or sequoia. Or, hey, bear, that's enough. Yeah, see, that's what happens when you have a home studio and a mutt. Sometimes you get some participation you didn't expect. Anyway, I thought it was really funny. I mean, literally, if you look 360 degrees from my house, mostly you see evergreen forest. For 300 yards to the north of me actually is forest, like state forest land, you know, trees, like tall 50, 60 foot evergreen trees, shoulder to shoulder, as far as you can see. So, of course, I kind of ignored her concerns. Anyway, that's the way that goes. Hey, but since Bear was barking, I did want to say this week we had to put one of our dogs to sleep. And I absolutely hate that. It's always kind of heartbreaking. You know, you have these critters in your life, and, you know, luckily I've never been one to take them for granted. I always know, in fact, every time I get a new dog, I kind of look at them and I say to myself, sometimes I say out loud, I know that you're going to break my heart someday. And it happens. And the dog we put to sleep, his name was Bogey. He was a little, forgive me for this, he was a little Pomeranian. He was my wife's dog. He was a Barkity Barkster. That's what I nicknamed him, was Barkity Barkster. And he was 17, almost, or maybe 18 years old. And just in the last, 6 months or so, about 4, 5, 6 months ago, we noticed, like, he was laying on a chair between us. We were watching TV, and he just had, like, this massive seizure. And, you know, it was kind of crazy. Like, we'd never seen that happen before. So, you know, we kind of watched him for a few days. He was, you know, we didn't know if he was choking on something or, you know, who knows. He was having a bad dream or something. But no, a few days later, same thing happened again. So we took him to the vet, and sure enough, he had a brain tumor. And we did what we could for months, you know, and we babied him along. And eventually, you know, he became blind. He was losing his vision, and he became totally blind in his left eye, and I think he could maybe see a tiny bit out of his right eye, but not much. And, you know, we just kind of came to that decision last weekend that, you know, that day was coming. And I think Monday we thought, okay, you know, this, you know, it's hard because you think you're doing everything you can for them, and we do, of course, do everything we can for them. And then there comes a moment, you know, that you just think, okay, this probably is no longer fair for him, and you got to make sure you're not keeping them alive, you know, for your own, I guess, some kind of gratification. So Rochelle and I decided to go ahead and put him to sleep, and that was on Tuesday. And man, God, you just miss him so much, you know. And he has a little buddy here. We have Australian Shepherd. His name is Quigley. And he's another like 9-pound dog. And then Bear, the one you heard barking, he's probably 40-something pounds. He's like a pit Weimaraner mix. He's an awesome dog. But Quigley and Bogey kind of grew up together. So, of course, Quigley's really missing him, too. But anyway, so, you know, don't want to bum everybody out. But I'm just saying, you know, it's crazy that, it looks like something happened in the chat. I hope that wasn't me. But anyway, the show's still going, so we'll just keep going. I don't know what happened there. But it looks like something's going on in the chat. Okay, so we covered the redneck moment of the week and the having our dog put down. Man, oh, I just miss that dog so much. You know, you really do love them. You just get so used to them being around, and they add so much pleasure to your life. I can't imagine people that don't have dogs, but, you know, I suppose if you don't have dogs, you don't have dogs, and you don't have to worry about these kind of times, and, you know. But I just can't imagine life without dogs. Or, I mean, there was a time, I think in the last year, let me see, I bet in the last year we had to put 3 dogs to sleep. Crazy stuff. I'm not going to get into it. Anyway, it's rough and it has sucked. So anyway, let's get on with the rest of the show. I wanted to talk about a couple things. I noticed this week there were some stories about this, like, COVID-related health issues. And this is kind of interesting because what they're finding out is people have put off preventative care and, you know, even some urgent care because of, you know, this whole COVID lockdown thing. And here's my comment on the lockdown thing. Somehow we, the people, have to get out of it. The government obviously isn't going to do it, and they shouldn't have done it in the first place. I've read several studies that say the only way to get out of this, achieve herd immunity is not by vaccinating people, but it's by letting this virus go and let people get infected, people that are probably going to survive. And that's what we need to do. Now, why the people in power don't know this, but of course they know it. Of course they know it, but what they're doing is keeping us in this lockdown for whatever reason, I guess just to exercise their power. But what we really should be doing, I mean, if you think about it a minute, if we let everybody just go back to their lives, go back to doing just go do your life, you know, Oh, thank you, Moose Girl. I appreciate that. If we let people just go back to their lives, go back to work, go back to enjoying life, go back to going out to bars, going to strip clubs, going to restaurants, going to wherever you want to go and do your thing, most of those people who go and participate in those activities are going to survive any kind of, COVID infection. If we let those people go do that and become infected with COVID, if that's the case, COVID will spread through the population. Yes, some lives might be lost, but mostly not. And herd immunity probably wouldn't take very long to achieve at all. But all we're doing by isolating people is preventing herd immunity from taking place. Something else that really bothers me is, why is it that, lost my train of thought, why is it that, I was thinking, I get so distracted sometimes. I have so many damn things in my brain, unfortunately, and my brain doesn't have that much storage capacity, but I was thinking of herd immunity, people being sick. Oh, yeah, and Moose Girl said something about saying it was just the flu. And this is something crazy that happened last week during my show. Rob Works put a link in the show that had a university that studied 1,500 positive COVID tests. They took the samples themselves and studied those positive COVID tests. They put them under a scanning electron microscope and looked to see if they could find any COVID viruses. They could not find, in 1,500 positive COVID tests, they didn't find one single COVID virus. So, just to make sure they weren't the only ones to come to this conclusion, they sent those samples to five other universities. Those five, and I'm not talking about slouch universities, you know, something, some, you know, community college out in the middle of nowhere who, you know, has a secondhand scanning electron microscope. We're talking about Stanford, UCLA, I don't remember the colleges exactly, but they weren't slouch colleges. They were universities that everybody kind of looks to, in some cases, for accurate data and research. Those five institutions couldn't find one single COVID virus. Not one single COVID virus in 1,500 samples that supposedly test positive for COVID. Now, I immediately took that website, that link, and trying to put it on Facebook, because I have very few people I consider friends, period. And some of those and other family members follow me on Facebook. I hate Facebook. Just like I hate all the other controlled, you know, social media platforms. But before I could even post it, it was telling me that the article contained false information. And I was thinking to myself, now wait a minute. These are colleges, respected colleges in this country. I say respected with some reserve, of course, because, you know, they're liberal institutions. I get all that. But they're the ones who are doing research. And those people who do that research are respected in their fields, not like the morons that we have in the governments who just assume some kind of authority because they're in the government. These people actually have done the research to become somewhat respected in their field. Now, these, okay, six altogether institutes of higher learning couldn't find one single COVID virus. But somewhere in that article, they mentioned that the COVID virus has not been isolated. So YouTube and Facebook would not let me post that link because it contained what they said was a lie. That it was false information, that, you know, the virus had been isolated, and how else could we have come up with vaccines since, you know, you need parts of those viruses to create vaccines. So that was my own and first personal example of being, I guess, blacklisted by Facebook and YouTube, and it really pissed me off. It pissed me off because what the sheeple are hearing now is mostly falsehoods, and they're being led down a road that, you know, who knows if they're going to return from it or not. I can tell you this. I think Real Liberty Media is going to have more and more people coming to it in search of some truths, in search of some more information. People are going to start looking for shows like the shows that we have on Real Liberty Media because I think people here desire the truth. And I think people who have shows on here, people who chat here, mostly really try to reveal truths. And you're going to, I really believe that there's going to be people like me. I have not been, well, how do I want to identify myself right now? I was going to say an anarchist. Maybe that's true. Maybe it's not. Let's say less than a year. And maybe even actually when I was, I guess sort of invited or encouraged to come here and do a show on Real Liberty Media, I actually identified myself as a conservative, Christian, you know, prior service, you know, member, all that stuff. I don't really consider myself a conservative anymore. And I think what you're going to find is more and more people are going to come from maybe both sides, both maybe all three different sectors of the spectrum, liberals, conservatives, and independents, are going to start looking for something else because basically, you know, what we've been doing for years and years and years just absolutely hasn't worked. You know, you think that at least you guys are far more awake than I am. That's for sure. This is pretty much new to me. But, you know, for those of us who are just coming out of that belief that, you know, if we vote, if we support one side or the other, that they're going to do what we want them to do is actually, you know, a falsehood. They're all taking us down the same road. It may just be at a different speed. It may be, you know, they may throw you a cookie once in a while, but basically they all desire the same thing, and that is ultimate power. And having the population, you know, bow down to them and believe that they are the ones that are going to save the world, or they are the ones that are going to save you. And that's just not true. I mean, I know I you guys, you know that I spend some time in the chat room, and a lot of times I'm just reading what you guys are talking about and learning a whole different way of life, opening my eyes to kind of a new beginning for me. And I was actually another podcast I listened to, the Corbett Report. That guy actually kind of has done the same thing. He said in one of the podcasts I listened to, and I just started listening to him about a month ago, and, you know, after a bunch of doom and gloom he talked about, he said, you know, the thing you have to do is do what you can for yourself. And I don't think there's been a time, at least in most of our lives, when that was more true than it is now. And I think that's why I wanted to do a show, sometime share with you some preps that you can do to take care of yourself in case, you know, when I should say shit hits the fan. I want you to have some tools you can rely on to make your life a little better. I was going to talk today a little bit about community supported agriculture, but I can see that I just don't have time. Half an hour into this show, I barely got off a paragraph, but it's okay. We'll get to it eventually. But one thing, I want to mention community supported agriculture, because we have a place kind of nearby here, and this is kind of cool. It's a farm. They grow food. They grow all kinds of food. And for a certain amount of money, and I think it's reasonable, I think $800 for 6 months, you can go in every week, and they will have a basket of food, or I should say baskets of food for you, whatever is ripe at the time, whatever they're harvesting at the time. And you can just go pick up food. What I really love about community-supported agriculture, and this is not going to be a detailed discussion about it, but I will come back to it in a future episode. But what I really love about it is, as you know, if you just watch any news, or follow news on any platform, not only legacy media, but independent media, you will see once in a while that there's food recalls because of salmonella or E. coli or whatever. And I actually have a pretty good explanation why that happens, and I'll share that in a future episode also. But what I like about community-supported agriculture is it's a local farmer. The dude is right down the road. It's not like this fruit and vegetables comes from either California or south of the border or some other country. This food comes from my local farmer right down the road who has hundreds of acres, who has all the equipment, has water rights, has, you know, everything needed to grow nice, sometimes organic, sometimes not, but delicious, healthy food. And if anything's wrong with it, do you think they're here in the community. They don't want to hurt anybody in the community. So they're going to make sure they're doing things right, because if they don't and a bunch of us get sick, we're going to be, you know, pulling up in their driveway where we go to pick up the food to complain about, you know, becoming sick from eating something. And as far as I know, that's never happened. It's kind of cool too. They also have grass-fed beef, which is awesome. If you've never had, you know, pure grass-fed beef, I'd say you got to give it a try, man. If you have to buy half a cow or something, do it. Flippin' delicious. I mean, I go to a different guy to get my beef because we have similar views on life and stuff, and he's just retired from something else, and he started raising cattle, and I said, hey, I will come and buy cattle from you whenever I need one. So, you know, and you know what else is nice about that? I don't have to worry about bringing a critter here and raising it myself on this 5 acres, which is probably just enough to do one, maybe two beef. But that'd be pushing it. And then I'd have to supplement them with hay, and then I got to do the vet thing and all that stuff. And here, if I just buy, you know, one from the guy down the road who does it, and he's used to it, and he's all set up for all that, hey, you know, I pay. So I pay a little bit. And it's really less expensive to buy half a beef from a local guy than it is going to the store. And at least I know what I'm getting. And again, the guy is right down the road. If there's anything wrong, we're going to go, you know, fix it. We're going to go talk about it. And he's going to make it right, because he only has so many local buyers, and he wants to make sure we're all happy. So if you get an opportunity, you know, now before the shit hits the fan would be a good time to look in the community-supported agriculture and see, you know, how you can get involved in it. I think if you look at it in the long run, you're going to see that it saves you money. You're going to get, you know, fresh fruit and vegetables, more than likely, every single week, locally grown, delicious food. So check that out, Community Supported Agriculture. I bet you can put it right in your web search for your area and see what's available nearby. And yeah, you might have to travel a little ways for it. But in my opinion, it'd be worth it. And just think, if you get hooked up now and you're supporting that farm, you're going to see that eventually when things go south, when the dollar collapses or whatever, hyperinflation, you know, World War III, whatever it is, if you're not dead, you're going to have an option to get food. And, you know, maybe it's going to be one of those things where you go volunteer some time, you know, to help out. And by helping out, they're going to give you a certain amount of food. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, if worse comes to worse, we're not going to be working anyway. So it's a good idea to look around for some of those things now. Man, I hate to do this. I'm not even going to ask in the chat to remind me if I did this story yet. I don't think I did. But I wanted to talk about, I think I started to talk about this stuff. So one of the things that medical professionals have been noticing is that people have put off routine care and emergency care to the point where they think there's going to be kind of a lot of big problems once people start going to their, you know, primary care physician or medical clinics or getting routine tests done, because so many of these doctors do suck. I agree. Hey, I'll actually tell you something kind of funny. So one of my patients this week said, I hate going to the dentist. I go, yeah, me too. I can't even remember the last time I went to the dentist. And before you guys say, well, you probably do it yourself, I don't. And I really don't hate going to the dentist. But, you know, I probably need to, but probably I don't need to. You know what I'm saying? I know if there's going to be a problem, I know it's coming. I just don't do it. Sorry. Anyway, so a lot of the things that have been coming up, people have been, you know, not getting breast exams, which I'm more than happy to do for anybody who's willing. I'm kidding. So these people are not getting these routine exams done. And they, you know, because cancer occurs in the population at a certain percentage, no matter if you're in a COVID lockdown or not. Basically, what's going to happen is when people come out of this COVID lockdown and start going to their primary care physicians for colonoscopies, prostate checks, mammograms, basic physical exams, and I can say as a dentist, oral exams, which also include a cancer screening, we're going to start finding more and more cancers that are now likely untreatable because they've gone a year plus without being detected. And cancers actually grow, some of them pretty rapidly. So, you know, when they say early detection is the key, they mean early detection is the key. That means there's not time to wait a year to find out if you have cancer and how far it has spread. I've noticed personally, and this has been going on, let's see, when did we go? We got out of lockdown in June, and actually it would have been the 1st of June, except I had an issue I ended up in the hospital for. God, if it's not one thing, it's another. I had diverticulitis, which I'd never had before, and that happened right around Memorial Day of last year, and we were supposed to start work on the 1st of June, and we had to delay opening for a week because I couldn't, but I can tell you personally, I see the damage that this lockdown has done. You know, even people who I think are pretty well adapted. And for example, I'll use myself as an example. I'm pretty damn happy all the time. I have thought since I was maybe 18 that I was somehow just blessed, that stuff happened for me that doesn't happen for everybody. And every day, I can even go back to my childhood and tell you that sometime in the past, my mom told me one time, she said, hey, she said, you know that we never liked you as a kid, which I already knew that for different reasons. But she said, you always woke up happy. Like you always woke up singing or whistling. You were ready to go, ready to start your day. Like I was a morning person and nobody else in the house was a morning person. So I've always known that I was pretty happy. I've always known that I was pretty blessed. I guess, you know, other people are going to call it white privilege, which sure, okay, call it what you want. But I just know for a fact that, I mean, yes, I've worked hard to get to where I am now. But it seems like all along the way, things just fell into place for me. And I have enjoyed every bit of it. You know, every day of my life, I was trying to think if any days of my life have sucked. And yeah, putting a dog to sleep, that sucks. But mostly, I mean, even having that dog in my life was some kind of a blessing. It was a good thing, you know, and yeah, it's got to come to an end at some time. So, but I can tell you, like, I can't remember very many days in my life that I think sucked. But even me, in this COVID lockdown, I grind my teeth. I clench my teeth like there's some kind of external stress. And I see this day after day in my clinic. I tell people, they come in, there's nothing wrong with their teeth. There's no decay, there's no fractures, but their teeth hurt because they've been clenching or grinding while they're sleeping or during the day, who knows when. But it is a real thing. And it's, I mean, compared to pre-COVID life, I might have seen one person a month with symptoms or signs of clenching and grinding your teeth. Now, every single day, I see at least one patient that has issues related to grinding. I mean, they come in. Some of these people have never had a cavity. That's rare. But they've never had a cavity. They've never had a filling. And all of a sudden, they have teeth that give the indication that something wrong with it. It's sensitive to hot and cold. It hurts when they chew on it. It may even be a little bit loose. And when you take an x-ray, you don't see anything. When you do an oral exam, you don't see any fractures. If you use a transillumination, which is a certain way of looking through a tooth to see if you can find fractures, I'll briefly describe this. The enamel crystal, when it's intact, light passes through it pretty easily. When it's fractured, when light hits the fracture, it blocks the light from passing through. So you can see a distinct fracture in the tooth because light hits the fracture and stops. So the side that the light is on is light, and the side that is fractured is dark. It's pretty easy to see that. But, you know, it's like a rampant disease state now that people are having pain with their teeth. And the other thing is, I don't think this is common in most other places. I mean, I don't think this is common in every single city or town or dental clinic. Since COVID has come about, I see people who have delayed care because they couldn't get in. Hell, almost every single dental clinic was closed within 100 miles of here.
Except for maybe one or two that stayed open to only handle emergencies. And at first, you know, everybody was so terrified of COVID that emergency had to be a real emergency before you could get seen. But now you see people, I see people with infections every single day in my clinic. And I'm not saying I see one patient who has one infection. I'm saying I see multiple patients per day that have at least one tooth infected. Now, would they have had that same infection if they saw me a year ago? I don't know. I just know that a year ago I didn't see an infection every single day. I know that the infections I see now are much more advanced. They've been there longer. People have been dealing with them for a much longer time than generally what I see. I mean, once in a while, you see somebody who comes in. The only time they come in is when their tooth hurts. And yeah, their tooth hurts because it's infected. I mean, that's normal. You see those people regularly. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about people who generally make their appointments, make their recall appointments. They are getting their cleanings regularly. They like to get a checkup every 1 or 2 years. And suddenly, they're in this place where they're having infections. And this is kind of scary to me. You know, people who generally have taken care of their teeth are now in a position where, and let's face it, yeah, everybody knows I'm expensive. You come and see me, I cost a lot. I try and offset that by doing this voluntary thing on the Dental Van, the Medical Teams International thing, but, you know, and sometimes I give away care. That's just the way it is. I mean, I like people to get care if they can get care, but it's expensive to save a tooth, man. Let's say you have an infection. You're going to pay at least $1,000 for a root canal. You're going to pay $1,000 for a crown and hopefully save the tooth. Or you're going to pay $80 or $100 to have it extracted, maybe $200 in some places, maybe $300 in some places. People are generally going to opt to have their tooth extracted, which is really sad. So just think of all these people who, you know, have put off care because of COVID. And I mean, the other care too, colonoscopies, breast exams, prostate, regular checkups, you know, having a growth on under your skin that you don't know what it is. All of those things they're not going to disappear just because we had COVID lockdown. They're still occurring at the same rate that they occurred before. You know, when I talk about getting sidetracked, so I forgot to mention something about that study and the whole YouTube, Facebook lockdown thing. And this is it, is those institutions, and Moose Girl actually alluded to this with a comment earlier, and I just now remember that I saw it in the chat. All six of the institutions that reviewed those positive COVID tests, remember I said they found zero COVID viruses by scanning electron microscope. But guess what they did find? They did find flu viruses. And I can't remember which ones that they said they found. I'm sorry about that. I don't have a link in the show notes, but I'll put a link in the show notes. I'll go look for it right after the show. Well, if I can find it, because you know how things are now. Things are being taken off the internet so damn fast that sometimes you can't go back to it. As a matter of fact, when that happened to me, I didn't even close the article for like 2 days because I was afraid of it going away before I added it to, I do my notes all week long and I try and keep a link to whatever I'm going to talk about so that I can link it in the show notes. I was afraid to close it because I was afraid the article was going to disappear, and I guess I'm not smart enough to know how to maybe save that page on my hard drive. Maybe you can do that. I'll have to try that. look into how to do that. That would be a really good idea. But anyway, but they found influenza viruses on all of, well, a ton of those tests. No COVID, but they found influenza, regular flu virus, which, you know, we've been told there's been zero virtually flu cases since COVID arrived, which I guess is awesome. I guess COVID killed. I guess COVID killed flu, right? I guess that's how you could look at it. So thanks for COVID. I'm kidding. All right, where are we at? Man, you guys, I bet you didn't ever think I'd talk this much when you invited me here. Hey, but I do want to say I'm grateful to be here. Moose Girl kind of mentioned to me one night, I said something about I'd like to do a show called Redneck Dennis. She said, hey, you could come over and, you know, talk to Grimner and see about doing a show over here. And Grimner was nice enough to let me do it. And I want to thank you for letting me do that. And it's really been fun. I didn't even know I could talk this much, but I guess I do. Let's see what else I have here. Oh, I did want to bring this up. This is really interesting. I got to get a drink. Give me a second here. So, you know, I did the number crunch about 3 or 4 episodes ago. And the actual, you know, percentage of people who die from COVID infection is 0.18% or something like that. But this is kind of a scary number. So I don't know if you guys saw this. This link is going to be in the show notes, but there was a report of COVID deaths from people who were fully vaccinated. So I'm going to read some of this. It says the number of recorded COVID-19 cases among Americans who have been fully vaccinated against the virus that causes it is now over 7,100, according to health officials. The so-called breakthrough cases are reported by states to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which then releases the figures. And it has a link to the CDC's figures, which, you know, trust them if you want. It says, in its new update, the CDC reported that 7,157 people who were fully vaccinated against the Chinese Communist Party virus, which causes COVID-19, still got the virus. Most of the breakthrough cases, 64%, took place among women, while 46% were among men or women aged 60 years old or older. Nearly 500 people who contracted COVID-19 despite being fully vaccinated required hospital care, though about a third of their illnesses were deemed unrelated to COVID-19, which means maybe it was related to the so-called vaccination. And it said 88, or listen to this, 1% of the breakthrough patients died. 1% of the breakthrough patients died. So actually, by the CDC's own numbers, you have a much, almost a tenfold, let me see, 0.18 to 1%. Okay, you have a 5 times higher possibility of dying from, air quotes, COVID after you're fully vaccinated than if you don't get the vaccine. 5 times greater possibility of dying from COVID after you're fully vaccinated compared to no vaccination. Why isn't that being thrown out there? Why isn't that headline news? I guess because it doesn't fit the agenda Okay, so here we are. All bleeding eventually stops. We're not done bleeding yet. It's a crazy time we're living in. Have to be prepared for it. You know, we have to do what we can to prepare ourselves for whatever is coming our way. And I think a lot of us know what's coming our way. I just want to say again, I appreciate Real Liberty Media. I appreciate this. I appreciate what everybody does here to educate and help others kind of see the world in a different way. That's kind of scary numbers. Oh, I'm going to end with one more thing. This is crazy. This is really crazy, you guys. I listen to a show at night. I'm one of those people who likes to listen to something as I'm going to sleep. Mostly, I listen to Ground Zero till about 9 or 9:30, and then I head to bed because that's the way I am. I sleep from 9 to 4, basically 9:30 to 4:30, something like that. I don't use an alarm clock. I sleep until I'm done sleeping, and I wake up. So the night before last, there was a show. I don't know if you guys ever watched or listened to this show. It's called Coast to Coast AM. It used to be Art Bell used to do Coast to Coast AM, and I listened to him way back. I think in 95 or something I started listening to him. But anyway, on the Thursday night, they had a show on about GMOs. Here, I'm going to give you two terrifying examples of GMOs that I heard on that show that were actually... One of them was going to come out of Oregon State University, which is in Corvallis, about, I don't know, 60 miles from here or something. But listen, this is crazy, and I'm probably going to go over a little bit. I know it's okay, so I'm going to do it, or at least I think it's okay, so I'm going to do it. Oregon State University was genetically modifying a bacteria that would help farmers by producing biofuel from their, I'll call it silage because I don't know what other term you would use for it. Basically, after they harvest their crops, they have a bunch of crap left in the field, and this bacteria would convert that plant material into biofuel, biodiesel, biofuel, whatever you want to call it. It was 2 weeks from being released to the public. This bacteria... I guess they had it in, oh yeah, this is what they did. They used it on a crop. They harvested the crop. They converted the silage to biodiesel, and then they replanted the field. Luckily, it was in a controlled environment. Oh, so they say. We'll see. When they replanted the field 2 weeks before they were going to let this GMO bacteria be used by people out in the real world, They replanted the crop, and all the plants died, and all the plants turned into the slime material because it was being converted to biodiesel. That's because the bacteria was still in the soil. And if they would have let that, they say, if they would have let that bacteria out into the world, it would have destroyed every living terrestrial plant. They said, of course, the plants in the ocean would probably still survive, but it would have destroyed every plant life above ground on Earth. That is terrifying. And then the other one was a GMO that they modified to prevent plants from frosting. And the same thing happened with that bacteria. It would have prevented plants from frosting, but actually what it was going to prevent was it would prevent freezing of water in the atmosphere also. So there would be no snow, there would be no hail, there would be no frost, there would be no anything to stop the, I mean, water wouldn't freeze because this apparently whatever it was particle would have been free in the atmosphere. This is the kind of stuff that they GMO. And I know I'm a little long. I just want to go on and say this one thing. When I was younger, I'm 63. When I was younger, not so many people. Oh, I know, Moose Girl. I'm going to turn off this. That's going to take care of some of those sounds. When I was younger, I mean, people got sick, kind of normal sick. You know, you got sick. You got the flu. You got, you got colds. Yeah, some people got cancer. I guess rarely people had intestinal problems. And without going into too much detail, I'm going to tell you my own little horror that I went through. No, I won't. But I'm going to tell you this. Like when I was going through what I was going through, this is about in 2013, I started trying to figure out what was going on. I started really thinking about GMO'd foods and how that was affecting us in general. I've always kind of hated Monsanto as long as I've known about Monsanto and what they were doing. But I had my own kind of intestinal issues and I felt sick for years. And what I finally did was I did this whole 30 diet where you don't eat anything but fresh fruits and vegetables. And I mean, you can look it up. There's some guidelines what you can eat. Nothing processed. You know, you eliminate a bunch of stuff from your diet for 30 days. And then when you start adding stuff back in, you see what is making you not feel well. And I've been saying for years now, and I'm sure there's some research that will support this, but you see people today, more and more people are having GI issues. I mean, like it's becoming epidemic itself, you know, the number of people you encounter. I guess because I'm in the healthcare field, I hear people's health histories a lot and get to see firsthand how much that has changed. I've been a dentist for God knows how many years. I don't know, 30-something, maybe 40 years. I guess not quite 40. Yeah, 38 years, something like that. You know, when you see for yourself the number of people who have GI issues today compared to 30 years ago, you know something in the environment has caused that. And my belief is that it's GMOs. And then, you know, my own personal, it took me 2 years to actually heal my, you know, GI problems. It took, you know, some real willpower that I really don't have. I guess I did, but I really don't have, I really didn't think I had it. But it takes some willpower to go through that. You know, and I see some people today who have those problems, and I make some simple recommendations to them. Hey, I know you're under the care of, I know you're seeing a primary care physician. I know that he's got your best interests at heart, but I'm telling you, try this whole 30, you know, diet. It's not really a diet, but it's a whole 30 way of eating, and then start putting stuff back in your diet and see what makes you sick. And I found out what made me sick, and I'll tell you, it was milk and gluten. Now, I'm a dude that was raised on milk and gluten, you know, baked goods, my favorite. And I can tell you, I don't care what you say about gluten-free baked goods, they suck. They are not as good as foods with gluten in them. And, you know, you miss those delicious dinner rolls warmed up with butter on them. You know, there's dairy and gluten. Now, today, I can tolerate a certain amount of both of those things. I think because my gut has healed and I've taken some precautions as to what I eat, I am not a health food nut by any stretch of the imagination. I love probably everything that's bad for you, but I have to, you know, I have to kind of take care of my gut. So I'm careful about certain things that I eat, but I still love meat and potatoes. So I love doing that. Hey, thanks everybody for sticking with me. I look forward to seeing you guys next week right here on Real Liberty Media with Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. See you next week.